Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy! And also a quick reminder, we do have a Patreon where Riley and I do a deep dive into a series of unfortunate events by Lemony Snicket. You have access to that exclusively on Patreon at the $5 tier, which also gives you early Monday releases and all ad-free content. So check it out.
Today's trigger warnings are explicit sexual content, blood, light BDSM, mention of death of a parent, and parental neglect.
And I don't technically have a review to read today, but I do have a nice comment we got on our Patreon that I'd like to read for you guys.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So this comment is from AJ Shane, and it says, I love how you guys can tell a juicy story, and I would love to see you grow into many more platforms one day. You guys literally have me dripping. I just love waiting for an episode to drop like a good bunny.
Drip, 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 girl. Let's go.
Yeah, I love it.
Thank you. We have such an effect. I had no idea.
I love it.
Me too.
Keep them coming.
And this week we're telling Riley all about Violet Veins by Paige A. Cook. And how many stars did you give it on Goodreads, Jenna?
I gave it a 4. I loved this one.
It was good. I gave it a 3.5. I wish it was more detailed. I think I wanted more world building. I think it could have been longer and more in depth.
Yeah.
But it was really, really cute. It was cozy. I liked the banter.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we would have gotten more character development from the character that we meet towards the end of the book. Because he had like a weird character arc. You'll see where I was like, what? And I feel like if the book was longer, we could have gotten more.
Yeah. Huh? It was good for a super small book. But it was just very condensed. Like, it was just like, just gives you all of like the bare necessities. If it, like, it has like the potential to definitely like grow into a really awesome book.
Yes, I agree.
All right.
And this was actually sent to us as an ARC by one of our friends on Instagram. So shout out to Paige A. Cook. She's an up and coming author.
Yeah,
baby. And she thought of us, and we love that.
Thanks, Paige.
So go check it out. Go read it. It's on Kindle Unlimited. So go read it.
Yeah, it's great.
Do it. All right. Tell me about this book.
Okay.
Tell me about it.
So this is the prologue, and the story takes place in the kingdom of Mossmire. There's Lowell Birch, who is a grand magician. He's traveled frequently with the royal families. He's riding horseback with his 16-year-old daughter, Lila, who's also a witch, and they're traveling with a group called the Rosewick Riders. As a grand magician, Lowell, he's traveled frequently with the royal family of Rosewick. They tasked their most trusted mage and confidant to arrive a day earlier than the royal family to inspect the safety of the potential alliances. After what was basically forever in boggy marshes and muddy paths traveling, they finally arrived to a palace where they're escorted to their rooms, and she recited the rules she knows like the back of her hand. Always carry my seal, no hexing, and never trust the fairies. You know, standard rules for any 16-year-old girl.
Yeah, I had those same rules.
Same.
No, my mom always told me, don't trust the fairies.
Don't fuck them either.
Every time I left the house, don't trust the fairies.
Mm-hmm. Years ago, Lila's mother passed away from a bacterial infection that she learned could have easily been treated if they had the money. Secretly, she resented her father for not being there for them, so now she uses his money for anything and everything she could think of. In some ways, it's like throwing it away as in punishment to him, because he's like high up, so he got some money to throw around.
She says, I'm buying a Birkin.
Lila was curious and wanted to see the entertainment that Mossmire had to offer. effort. So her father warned her that it probably wasn't something that was among her favorite activities, but still she was restless and she was like, I'm gonna go see what's up. She entered the fun fair of misfortune and was eating a deep fried lizard covered in chocolate.
Oh. Ew. That's unfortunate.
And because she's a witch, she has like this like rare ability to be able to see people's auras. And she's just like eating this cute little chocolate covered lizard on a stick and watching people's auras flash by. And here she's just like a normal girl. Like she doesn't have to be the diplomat's daughter. She's just chilling, vibing. There's a little teenager with violet hued eyes and no trace of an aura that sits across from her and told her that she was eating her treat wrong since it's gotten a rotten stinger in the tail. And immediately she's intrigued because she's never met a being whose aura she couldn't read. And at that exact moment, she gritted her teeth and had an electric prick that jolted her tongue because she like bit down on the stinger.
Yucky.
Disgusting. He like walked over to her and he took his hands and gently tugged on her chin, causing her mouth to open, and took an ice cube and placed it on her tongue, causing it to ease the pain.
Wait a second. Her main characters today are 16?
This is the prologue.
Okay, 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 okay. That's right. That's right. Okay.
You're like, ew.
I was like, wait, we're listening to kids fuck?
No. Can we not? Yeah. She was like, wow, he's cute. He's like, hey, I normally don't do this, but do you want to hang out with me? And she's like, sure. They were being cute little teenagers playing games, and she felt normal, but she felt as if like the universe was pulling her to him. They play a game of frog toss, and Lila wins her prize, and she's like, what should I pick? And the stranger picks out an emerald ring with intricate carvings, and she pushes it in his hands and tells him that this is something to remember her by, and besides, it's too ugly for her to wear anyways.
Oh, burn. Nice.
He's like, oh, this is cute. You can win this. And then she's like, oh, this is for you. It's too ugly for me.
She's like, that's hideous. But thanks.
She seems great.
He's holding her one hand. His other hand lightly gripped her chin, and her aura is a light pink and it's radiating. She's thinking, oh my God, I'm about to have my first kiss. He's leaning in and puckering his lips. And then a voice goes, Lila, there you are. I've been looking for you for hours. And a young prince approaches. Mr. Mysterious Teen literally transforms into a bat and flies away. And only then did she realize that she never got his name.
She got ghosted.
She got batted.
She got batted.
I was about to say.
She got batted.
And that was the prologue.
Okay.
And it doesn't say how many years later. I think she's 24. The man that she loves is marrying someone else today. She's using magic to get through her heartache. She's drinking a magic potion, one that replaces her cold, empty emotions with burning warmth, which I honestly think is alcohol. Beric, the crown prince, is getting married today. So the one that like stopped her from having her first kiss is the one that she ended up falling in love with that's getting married today.
Oh.
Cock block.
I know. She doesn't even want to go, but he literally hand-delivered the invitation to her in front of everyone, so she couldn't even protest or say that it got lost in the mail. So she's going to wear her most revealing dress and make him drool. She chose a bright red sweetheart neckline with a corset that plunges all the right ways.
I'd kick her out of my wedding. I'd be like, it's my day, bitch.
This bitch has got to go.
Get out. You cannot look that good on my wedding day.
Lila's the director of the scrolls department in the Kingdom of Rosewake, and her place in society is very highly regarded. Like, she has a very high reputation, and she handles it with care. But that was mainly for Beric.
I want him to look at me now on his wedding day and dream of me at night. I hope he presses his mouth to hers and wishes it was mine. I hope he sinks himself into her and utters my name by mistake. Devil.
Mm-hmm. I would cry if that happened to me.
I would be hysterical if on my wedding night my husband was like, another girl's name.
Annulment.
I immediately would be like, get out of my pussy. We're not fucking.
Vacate my premises.
You have been evicted.
Deep down, she knew that Beric was never hers because he was the crown prince. She just thought that he would at least fight for her. When he sees her, his lips part and desire sparks in his aura, as well as embarrassment, and she just glares at him. When Beric's new bride, Princess Aslan, comes out, his aura changes to pink and her chest sank. She knew that she was as good as forgotten to him. As she promises this will be the last tear she ever sheds over Beric, her attention is pulled to a violet-eyed, handsome stranger to her left because she can't read his aura. There's only ever been a handful of times when she wasn't able to read someone's aura, so she's immediately, her interest is piqued. They're at the reception and there's an open bar and Lila is getting completely smashed. The violet-eyed stranger was standing in front of her, and because she's drunk and she has zero filter, she tells him that he's incredibly beautiful. Normally, she keeps everything so locked down. No one, including herself, has seen her act this way. But seeing the person that she loves be with someone else who he loves will do that to a girl.
Sure will.
He tells her she took his seat and she's like, what are you going to do about it? He's like, I'm not sure. Maybe we could trade. And she's like, because I'm in a generous mood, best use it to your advantage. And he bends down to her neck as if insinuating like a scandalous request and whispers, allow me to be your distraction for the night. She was like, do you know who I am? And he grabs her wrist and jerks her onto his lap and says, not just yet. And they're nose to nose and she forgets how to breathe.
Wait, aren't they like in a crowd, a seated crowd for a wedding?
Mm-hmm. Everyone at the table's like, I am so uncomfortable. I hate this.
I mean, they're like, there's like stuff going around. They're at like a wedding reception. So people are like drinking, dancing.
Okay. I thought it was like ceremony. Everyone's sitting down and they're just like, yeah.
Is that the reception?
Who are you, bitch?
Okay. Makes so much more sense.
They're all about to say like, I do. And she's just like, you're so hot. She has her hands around his neck and she throws her head back laughing. And for the first time all night, Beric looks her way. So she takes her chance, half out of spite and half because she's genuinely interested. And she stands and says, follow me, and takes his hand. She's worried that he'll realize that she's using him, but it's like he knows that he's playing with fire because he pushes her along the dance floor and spins her to the music, definitely becoming the center of attention. The stranger reveals that he knows her name, therefore knowing that she holds a high place in court. And even then, he's still so confident around her and she's thinking how hot that is. She's the one that's in a position of power, yet the grip that he has on her is one of protection. She's vibing with it real hard. With her body more and more relaxed, they're basically gliding across the dance floor at this point, and when it's over, the attendees even clap for them. Stupid Prince Beric comes over with his new wife, Aslan. They swap quick pleasantries, and she tells them that she can't take all the credit for her dance moves, and that's when the stranger finally introduces himself as Emery. As the prince and princess leave, Emery asks for one more dance, so she slips her hand into his, and the rest of the room dissolves. He presses his forehead to hers as the starting position of the song, and she once again loses her breath. As they're dancing, he asks if she plans to pay for her side of the deal, almost certain he's about to claim his prize right then and there, but thankfully he was a gentleman and dipped her in a low grand finale and then pulled her back up, bowing as the audience applauds. Something deep in her, not magic, is compelling her towards him. Emery leads her out of the room into an empty stairwell and says, well then, time to pay up. So she grabbed his collar and pulled him down to meet her, teasing him and said, fair is fair.
I can't wait to taste you. His body leans into mine. His hands greedily explore and tease. He grabs my hair harder at the base of my neck and tilts my head to the side. His tongue swirls near my collarbone and I am slick with sinful thoughts and need. Emery, I whisper. His name has twirled through my mind since he announced it. I'm right here, darling. Two sharp canines pierce my skin and I am lost.
He's a vampire.
He's a vampire.
He says, you better hold on tight, spider monkey.
I sparkle in the sun, baby.
I love it. So there was a quick piercing pain followed by a euphoric sensation that she's never felt before. There's definitely a connection that's happening between them and she's wet from the bite. She feels like she just shared an intimate emotional connection and she just had the most dangerous form of pleasure she's ever experienced. He asked if she wants to go somewhere quieter as his hands make their way to cup her pussy and he finds her soaking wet for him. She tells him, let's take this party back to her place. When they get to her apartment, the second they get inside, it's like all control he had in public is gone because he picks her up and she wraps her legs around him, which she's loving because she's a thick queen and Emery made her feel like she's light as a feather.
Oh, she's thick?
She got some thick thighs and she's like, no one can pick me up. And he just picked her up like she weighed nothing.
Oh.
They smash into the wall and he bites her again with his vampire fangs and unbound passion filling her senses. Then he takes her in and she can feel their heartbeat echoing, beating together as one.
Ooh.
She wakes the next morning with him beside her along with a splitting headache and she tells him that last night was a mistake and she didn't mean to lead him on, only to find out that he was a virgin before their time together.
No.
We got a male virgin, let's go!
Yeah, about time. He's like, what do you mean it wasn't as good for you?
I love you.
So he found out that he was a virgin, which shocks her considering how sexy he is and how good it was. She was like, there's ain't no fucking way. She said that she'll do whatever she can within her powers to make it up to him. He's like, okay, I know what I want. I want to be able to bite you for an entire year.
What?
He told her that she's the only one that knows his secret, that she let him freely drink from her last night. She's trying to think over her options and she doesn't think it's a good idea and tries to turn it down. And he tells her that there's nothing else that she has to offer him. He tells her that if she won't allow him to draw life from her while he has business in Rosewick, there might be one other option he would consider as taking her responsibility, becoming his wife. She's like, are you crazy? We literally just met. And he's like, yeah, I just threw away my innocence and virginity down the drain. Who's gonna want me now?
I'm tainted.
When she doesn't answer, he's like, fine, have it your way. I need to feed once every 3 days. And she's like, I didn't agree to that either. He was like, meal or bride or both?
He's like,
Either way, I win. She decided on the bite, which is obviously the most rational course because she's like, I literally don't even know you. Like, I'm not going to be your bride. So they draw up like terms and agreement for their new business arrangement. She's like, this is strictly business. Their arrangement type thing is no outside romantic relationships. Physical contact is okay, but it has to be mutual. Like she has to consent to it. She's like, you cannot touch me unless I consent.
Fair.
And this has to be strictly confidential. And then also he put in, he's like, I don't want you drinking if I'm not present.
He's like, you're kind of slutty when you're drinking.
Yeah.
He's like, you really put out. That was nice for me, but don't want to see it again.
It's 4 a.m. and Lila is at work by herself and she hears the door open and finds Emery there with a scroll of parchment. And it's the official seal of Wintaro, the neighboring kingdom. She remembers at the wedding, Emery telling her that he was a scribe. She didn't know that he was going to be her new scribe. She's mortified, and this complicates their new relationship so much more. Plus, everyone at the wedding just saw them together and leave together. Just overall, not good, very bad. She's like, fuck, I just fucked my new employee.
So what do the scribes do for them?
It's just basically like a head librarian, like a head witch librarian. As I took it from the book, as they like translate old scripts.
Okay.
So she places Emery literally as far away from her as possible and gives him so much busy work. But of course, when the rest of the scribes come in, he's noticed right away. She introduced him to the rest of the scribes and stated that he was from Windmire. And then Ren, one of the other scribes, said, you're from Windmire? Is it true that... And then Lila cut her off and said, enough questions! And then sent her to go fetch everyone's lunches. Lila was spilling the tea to her bestie, Meryl. Meryl is a scribe and literally Lila's only friend. She spills everything about the night to Meryl, minus the blood-sucking and contract part. And Meryl's like, girl, why have one night of fun when you can have a year full of fun nights? So she's like, you should just, like, fuck him for the whole year.
Yeah, why not?
As Lila's walking to work the next morning, she notices a bright pink infatuation aura coming from the person that Emery's talking to, and she's, like, trying to keep it cool, but she has a whole Delulu moment where she's like, what if I'm pregnant? This bitch could be talking to the father of my unborn child.
Oh, God.
Okay, calm down.
Wildly unhinged.
Yeah, she's having a Delulu moment, and she's like, I'm not sure how fast vamp babies could happen, but what if it's like super sperm or something? If it was anyone else, she would have let it go, but it was this bitch, Jessica, and she fucking hates Jessica. Jessica's a green witch who's also a bitch.
Jessica's our bitches.
Yeah. Fucking Jessica.
Fuck you, Jessica. I'm just kidding. I don't know many Jessicas. I don't want anybody to get offended by that.
I'm sure there's some nice Jessicas.
Let us know.
But this Jessica, she's a power-hungry little whore, and Lila hates her. So she goes up to Emery, and she, like, storms up, and she's like, Emery, my office, please. And he takes his seat time, like, still talking to Jessica, and Lila's jealousy is, like, seething, and she's like, I trust you heard me.
Oh, okay.
So Emery just says, yes, master. Which gets on her nerves even more. She's trying to figure out a way to, like, talk herself out of this because she's like, fuck, like, I didn't even have to really talk to him. I just needed him to get the fuck away from her. But thankfully, like, he saved her because he was like, is this about today being day three? And she's like, yes, I'd love to coordinate. And she tells him that her place is off limits because she's still trying to get his scent out of her house. Like, she was, like, huffing pillows and shit. She's, like, obsessed with him. She's like, can we just get it out of the way now? And he's like, this is not a good idea. It's not a good place to do it here. And plus, we only have 5 minutes before people come. And she's like, no, let's just get it out of the way right now. And he's like, just remember, you're the one who wanted to do it here. And then he sinks his teeth into her. She moans so loudly. And then she remembers that they're in the library. But she needs his hands on her almost as much as she needs oxygen. It's almost too much, but not enough at the same time. She's moaning louder now. And he takes his hands and covers her mouth. to stifle her moans. She's giving in to pure ecstasy, wrapping her hands in his hair, and he puts his finger in her mouth, and she's sucking viciously.
Oh,
I know. A security guard peeks around the corner, and he's like, "Who's there?" And they take off running. She sucks at running, so he throws her over his shoulder, causing her to giggle. She's not worried about getting caught because she oversees the library and the employees, which counts as the guards. He outruns the guard and ditches them into a room. He admits that he should have warned her about how intense it would be because a vampire bite is so pleasurable. And she's like, "What other risks should I know about?" And he replies, "Your blood tasting so good, I could drain you dry." And she's like, "Yep, this could definitely be a problem." She thinks back to her earlier Delulu issue and she's like, "Could I be pregnant?" And his eyes widen and he's like, "What would make you think that?" And she's like, "You didn't use protection." He told her that only vampires could get impregnated by him.
Oh.
The thought of him fucking someone else completely irks her. It shouldn't, but it does. He asks her if they're going to pick up where they left off, but only this time she should sit. So she does. And there's a trail of blood dripping from her neck, threatening to mark her white shirt. And he takes his tongue and licks it up.
What?
She starts to straddle him and he whispers into her collarbone, "That's a good girl."
A virgin my ass.
I know, fucking liar. How do you know what to do with your tongue?
Maybe he's just a virgin and he reads smut.
Oh, that's true.
Maybe he like practices in the mirror, you know? Did you guys ever do that?
No.
No, I have not done that.
Whenever you were kids, you would never like try practicing kissing in the mirror?
I just kissed girlfriends, which makes me think that I was a little lesbian.
Yeah. In the mirror, Riley?
Yeah.
I love you, mirror.
You're like, "Damn, I look so good today."
No. It was practice.
I was just practicing.
It was practice. I was just trying to learn, okay? Kiss myself in the mirror.
As he drinks from her, the world around them disappears, and she goes with him to almost like a dream world. She asks Dream Emery what this place is, and he tells her that it's whatever she wants it to be. The bite of a vampire elicits a lot of emotions, and this dream place basically splits her focus in half. He tells her that all vampires can technically create a dream palace, but many of them don't because it's usually reserved for mated pairs. In the real world, she's so fucking horny, it pulls her from her little dream palace with Emery. She's literally rocking back and forth on his cock, and he murmurs "fuck" and tightens his arm on her, literally begging her to stop, but she can't help it. Her pussy is like begging for friction. He's not having it though, so she's now like sexually frustrated, and she's like, "Fine, I'll do it myself." She's playing some pussy DJ and comes. And she comes out of the bloodlust, and she feels guilty and apologizes to him and thanks him for keeping his promise. He tells her no things is necessary, and he knows that she doesn't actually want him in that way since she's made it perfectly clear.
Oh, poor boy.
But he's sticking to his boundaries, and we love that.
Still don't think he's a virgin.
No.
Fucking liar.
You popped my dick cherry.
Ew.
Lila is beyond stressed at work with budget cuts due to the council being dickheads and making low blows while the prince is on his honeymoon, knowing that he won't have her back while he's away. Emery comes in with her favorite pastry and helps her brainstorm ideas for the upcoming charity event they just created together to help raise money for the upcoming quarter. She's got a headache, she's overworked and tired, so she rests her head on his shoulder, which was a clear misstep because he snaps his head to her and stares into her eyes. There's so much tension going on between them. She's thinking about how she wants him here, now, in the middle of this library, when the doors crash open and the scribes come filing in. She pulls the team together to go over the plan for the event her and Emery just put together, and one of the raffles is being a date with the scroll department employees. Everyone loved the ideas, and Meryl and her husband Dash are going to sit out on the raffle, which leaves Ren and Emery. Ren was all game for it, but then Emery says he doesn't really feel comfortable participating in that one, but he promises to pull his weight for the whole event. Lila just nods and decides to take it up with him privately, hoping that a couple bats of the eyelashes might help him, given. Emery's getting under her skin, and not in a sexy cute way, in a way that all the walls that she's building so high to keep everyone out, he's like parkouring the fuck over. He's able to see through it all. Today again is day 3, and she's noticing how Emery's hands are trembling. She tells him that they should do it at his house today. He's like, "I thought we weren't allowed to be alone together anymore." And she's like, "Well, we don't have another option tonight." She points to his hands, and he tries to make a joke about reenacting their last encounter and asks if she was a fan of voyeurism to lighten the mood, and says that he had a blast. And she's like, "Let's never talk about that again." They get to Emery's apartment, and it's clean and tidy and freaking cute. She tells him that his place is nice, and he replies with, it's okay. And she's thinking to herself, if this is just okay, what kind of place does he come from?
He's got money? Comes from money?
He might have some money. She's trying to make herself cozy in his home, but she's a little nervy. Emery asks if she wants a cup of coffee, and he returns drinking one too. She was like, whoa, I thought you only did that to blend in with mortals. And he tells her that since she's a vampire by birth, his taste buds develop differently than those turned. Even he can get cravings on occasion. She pats the seat next to her, saying, like, let's get started. And he tells her it can wait. They have important business to attend to first. But he's low-key struggling. He dumps candies and goodies that they got earlier on the table, and she's so excited because her favorite ones are there. But she's like, he's clearly trying to hold it together. And she's like, really, it's no problem if you want to feed now. He kind of snaps, saying, I said not yet. And she's like, that was fucking hot. That does something for me. And she's like, I like it when you talk to me like that. That's fucking hot.
She's like, yell at me. Get mad at me.
He grips the leather of the chair that he's sitting in. And she's thinking about how bad she wants it to be her thighs that he's gripping with that force. They get to what they actually need to do, which is brainstorm the potential investors for the event, who they're going to invite at such short notice. And she's gnawing on her lips, and they start to bleed, and his eyes dart up. His pupils dilate, and he sits eerily still.
My eyelids close to blink, and I feel the gust of wind before I feel the warmth of Emery's mouth on mine. He's unpoised, clumsy even. He needs to feed. I shouldn't take this personally. He sweeps his tongue over the small cut and applies a small amount of pressure to coax out a droplet of blood. The taste of French vanilla coffee creamer lingers on my lips as he frantically pulls away.
He apologizes as he slowly comes undone. They're nose to nose at this point, panting, and she just knows she's crossing a blurred line, but just whispers, please. She's internally kicking herself because she feels a tinge of pain at her neck. She was begging him to kiss her, and she realizes she can't want him to kiss her. That's not part of their arrangement. She goes to their dream space, and instinctually she reaches for him, but he pauses with a solemn expression, saying, what am I going to do with you, Lila Birch, as he clenches his fist. Her physical body clenches in his hair, and she's moaning beneath him.
Emery retracts his fangs long enough to utter a single fuck as I whimper in his ear and grasp my breast in place of my pussy. Is it appropriate? No. Is it more appropriate than coming on his lap as he eats dinner? Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I just say go for it.
He pushes her hand away from her breast and is literally begging her that she needs more self-restraint. This is painful for him. She says, what if I can't? He tells her it's her own part of the contract that says no touching without explicit consent. And she's like, you have my enthusiastic blessing. Please put me out of this bloodless misery. He takes his shirt off and tells her there's no going back after this. And she tells him that there's just one rule, no kissing.
No kissing anywhere? He asks again. What about here? A gentle finger lay against my still bleeding neck. He runs his tongue over the wound, licking until the skin begins to close on its own. The axe softens me. How about here? Emery lifts my breasts and swirls his tongue near the top of my dress. Heat plagues my cheeks and warmth pools at my center.
It's a little tease.
She tells him on the lips, and he says, what a shame. Then he gives her one last chance to change her mind, and then she reassures him that this is what she wants.
He's swift with his motions, freeing my breasts from their corseted cage. Memories from the last time we were intimate do not compare to the Emery before me. That Emery was gentle, perhaps even cautious. On top of that, we were both pretty drunk at the time. Pinned to this leather couch, I didn't know what to expect, but it isn't the sharp pain of fangs sinking into my nipple. Involuntarily, I wince, waiting for Emery to open the cloud dreamscape back up. But instead, he drinks, pulling more from my tender flesh. The icy burn of the bite creates an inescapable delirium. Emery teases by gliding his hand up my thigh, rubbing oh so close to where I want him, but not quite close enough. Exquisite pleasure interlaces with the stinging pain, and I surrender completely to him, lost in my bliss. Time moves faster and slower at the same time. A satisfied Emery retracts his fangs and seals my wound, blood trickling down his face. I've never dreamed of a more beautiful monster.
Sexy. The only sound is their erratic breathing and synchronized heartbeat until he slaps her ass and she's nearly begging for his cock. He tells her to say how bad she wants it, and she's shy and shocked because with Beric, they never spoke like that to each other. They hardly even made noise, so this was definitely new to her.
Oh my god, what do you do? Just fucking silence?
She was like a side chick, so like they had like fucking his office and shit. So it was just like quiet, fast sex, pretty much.
Because they never went public.
It was all secret.
That's right. I'm going to ask again, and I want you to use your words, he says. Tell me, how much do you want it, my little mage? More than anything, I confess, two fingers plunge into me, pushing my throat further into the hand clutching my neck. Emery spares me no softness, roughly stretching me like he's preparing for something larger.
His dick. Yeah, you don't take it.
She remembers grinding against a large length in the room in the library, and she's thinking, how the fuck can I take that? She knows that she did it before, but she was drunk and loosey-goosey and desperate. She's sober now, but still desperate.
He pulls my throat back so his lips touch my ear. That's what I needed to hear. Good girl. Fuck. His voice alone almost sends me over the edge. We're partially dressed, but I feel more exposed than ever. Am I hurting you?
She shakes her head no, and he says that they're gonna try something that he thinks that she'll like, and he bites her right ass cheek. Not to feed, but just because. Then he moves to her clit and stops right before she's about to come. He tells her that's payback for all the torture that she's put him through, and she says, what torture? And he says, you haven't had the slightest idea. And then he orders her to stay on the couch. He leaves the room and comes back with a tie, and tells her he can't promise to respect her boundaries if he doesn't have some for himself. She asked him why the dream place disappeared, and he said when they're together like this, he wants her to feel all of him, the pain and the pleasure, and then places a tie around her mouth, as in like a kiss barrier. He picks her up with his hands, digging into the bottom of her thighs, and knocks her against the wall as his cock is about to enter her.
If you want it gentle or easy, you won't find that within me tonight, he says. He sinks further into me. You have no idea what torture it's been dreaming of you around my cock every night, yet falling asleep cold and wanting. Now that I have you, the size of him is daunting. It feels as though I've reached my limit, and he hasn't even filled me with his full length. Fuck, he breathes. Your pretty little pussy was made for me. I'll never let you go. Delicious, white, hot pain shoots through my body as he thrusts to fully sink into me.
Delicious.
You're pretty little pussy.
Emery is in full control, and she knows that he would never hurt her for his own pleasure, and that turns her on even more. So she loosens the tie enough to tell him to take her in his room. He dumps her on the bed, and instead of letting him get on top, she wants him to know how badly she wants this, so she gets on top and slowly rides him.
Do you like riding my cock, princess? Looking him in the eye when he says such dirty things is difficult. I never imagined this is what he's like in the bedroom. I don't dislike it, but it is new for me. I never knew being so vocal could make me so feverish. Yes. I keep it simple. Worried I'll ruin it if I speak too much. Touch yourself for me, he commands. Yes. Yes, sir, he corrects me. Yes, sir, I obey. My clit is practically begging for attention. A few light touches and I'm so close I think I'll come here and now. Not yet. Please. The desperation in my voice is mortifying. Patience, love. My knees shake from the anticipation. I remove my hands before I become disobedient and continue writing him. After a few moments, Emery replaces my hand with his own. That's a good girl.
Virgin my fucking ass.
Hot.
Honestly, that's what I was just about to say. Do you like writing my cock, princess? No fucking virgin says that.
A hot one does.
I mean, fucking woof.
She comes and it's magical. He gently takes her face in his hands and kisses her forehead and rolls her on her back and tell her if it becomes too much to let him know. She can tell he's close and tells him to bite her as he comes, and he does as she says, and it's fucking hot. He gets up and gets a warm wet washcloth to clean her up, and she knows she needs to go home and make a healing salve for her pussy because she's gonna be sore tomorrow. He grabs her thighs and tells her just a moment more, and they lay naked together embracing their warmth. He's playing with her hair and she has her head resting on his chest, and she didn't think vampires have heartbeats, but she can clearly hear his beating rhythmically, lulling her to sleep. The next morning, she tries to escape from him, and he tightens his grip on her and pulls her closer. He makes her breakfast, which is so fucking cute, because he's a freaking vampire, and she takes it in his room, and her eyes rest on a glistening treasure laying in a golden trinket tray, an emerald ring, which feels oddly familiar to her. Lila goes to Morvina, a nymph who's high up on the council like her, but is in charge of organization and flowers and pretty much like the whole view of the city. So she's like a botanist. She told Morvina that she needed a favor, and she's like, what's in it for me? And Lila tells her that she never asks for favors without supplying something of equal or greater value. Apparently, Morvina has been looking for some super old fragile script containing stuff on botany pertaining to a particular crossbreed variant, and Lila knows where it is and how she can access it. So immediately, Morvina agrees to the terms. Her eyes swing over to Emery and her, and Marina's like, good for you, and then bumps into her laughing. Internally, Lila's cursing herself now because she's like, fuck, I should have changed before going straight here, because she's still wearing her yesterday's clothes.
The walk of shame.
Now they're looking for another potential fundraiser partner, Vic, and Emery's like, I know where he might be, and the next thing she knows, she's pedaling in a swan-shaped boat across the river.
I've never done that, and I want to do that so bad.
Me too. It sounds so fun.
Emery's like, come on, just let me have this. She asks him how he's not cooking or disintegrating in the sun, and he just firmly tells her that he has his ways, as he's twirling the chunky ring on his left hand that has a deep garnet gem in the center. He fucks with her about how he can be in the sun, and she did not take it kindly. She was, like, embarrassed about it that he, like, fucked with her. I don't know. She just, like...
She got all defensive.
So she literally stood up out of the boat and just jumped in the water and started swimming away.
Okay.
Unhinged behavior.
Seriously.
Emery's like, get back in the boat, and she's still swimming away, even more embarrassed now that she just acted like that. So yeah. When he finally catches up to her on solid ground, he takes off his jacket and puts it over her shoulders like a king, and he's like, next time, please call me an asshole and push me in the water.
He's just pedaling after her in the swan boat.
Yeah.
He's like, wait.
He tells her that he knows where they can find Vic. He brings her to a maze, and she's like, why would Vic be in a maze? And he's like, well, he wouldn't. I just wanted to spend some time with you. And she's like, well, I did just act crazy, so I guess it's the least I could do. They reach the end of the maze, and a single lavender rose dangles between them, and he grips her waist, pulling her closer to him. It's like he's about to devour her in a kiss, but it never happens. Her eyes fly open, and he's looking at her with such lust and hunger, and the lavender rose above them withers, along with all the flowers that were touching it.
Would they all die?
All of them. They withered and died. Lila goes to the fourth floor of her building, which is the astronomy tower, and he finds her furry satyr friend Vic. When she asks for his help, he told her that he will consult with the stars. Emery walks in the door late for work, and he has a drink and a pastry for her. The staff is giving him shit for calling him a suck-up, and Datch says, just tell everyone else, fuck you, why don't you? And he said, sorry, there's only one person in the room I'd like to fuck.
HR, where are you?
Yep, where?
She plans to meet with the department head, Gub, who is Rosewick's weapon master and fiercest warrior. He tells her that he heard that she was holding a party this weekend, and that he never picked her for the Bacon type. And she was like, in the past, when Gub had to do the same thing, Lila criticized him for doing so. So she's like, I feel like a fucking dick now. And she told him that she came to apologize for her past comments to him, and that she brought him a peace offering. It was a parchment detailed with instructions on how to craft the Shard of the Sea, which is a legendary and insanely hard weapon to forge. Gub is insanely hooked and accepts her offer. He shows her the guard's new routine, and she genuinely is impressed and compliments him, allowing them to showcase this at their event. Next, she goes to the healer tower and meets Mazoga, who is not a fan of her, to say the least. She asks if she can go to the fundraiser, and says even if she wanted to, she's busy that day. And she's like, I didn't even tell you what day it was.
I'm busy that day, sorry.
Busy for the next coming future. Sorry.
Mazoga viciously rolled her eyes and was like, why don't you just ask your royal fuck buddy? They have a little catty girl fight moment, and Lila's like, don't act all innocent. I remember your secret affair with Dr. Moonstone. Whore.
Call her out. Slut.
Lila's like, you don't have to go, but can you at least consider making a donation? And she said that she'll think about it. She makes one more stop to the chemist, Al, who's a fucking weirdo. And she's high-key stressed about what his favor is gonna be. So after he said that he'd attend and went to go ask her for something in return, she stopped him and told him to submit it in writing, just in case.
Oh, God.
She was worried that it'd be like a cup of her bathwater or some type of like other bodily fluid. So she's like, just write it down and put it at my desk.
I'd give someone my bathwater, I think.
Hell yeah. I'm not using it.
Yeah. I have no use for it. Take it.
She goes to her father's house, and things are not super great between them. She just wants a relationship with her dad, but there isn't one, and they don't know how to have that with each other. She's mad at him that her life is falling apart, and he hasn't visited or checked in on her once, and she's always having to be the one to seek him out. And she asks if, now that she's grown, does he no longer care about her? His aura changes to navy blue, and he's like, what right do I have to meddle in your life? And she's like, you're literally my father. Like, that's what they do. They opened up with each other more than they probably ever have, and some deep eye-opening conversations that Def needed to be had were said. She asked about what her mother was like, and they never ever talk about her mom. And he responded talking so fondly and lovingly of her. He tells her that she's the only woman he ever loved, and the only one he ever will. And that he prays to the gods that when she finds her happiness, that she chases it and never lets it go. He said that he heard that she's found a new companion and that when she didn't deny it, he asked if he can meet him. She said that we'll see. And he invited her over for dinner next week, wanting to spend more time with his daughter.
Cute.
2 days later, the scroll department has been working nonstop to set up everything. And Lila is getting annoyed about Jessica, I fucking Emery so much. At the end of the day, everyone is heading home, but Emery makes an excuse to be left alone in the office with Lila by telling everyone he has to run back inside the office because he forgot his quill. She's absolutely jonesing for him. Emery pretends to help her look for her non-existent quill, but says he can't find it, and is like, good thing I have such a generous boss who will let me borrow one of hers.
Oh.
She goes to her desk and brings him one, and he asks how he can ever repay her kindness, and starts to reach up her skirt, and she stops him, telling him that she's gotten her period. But Emery just smiles and Lila's like, no, I'll make a mess. And plus, can you even consume that type of blood?
I'm sure he can.
It's only every vampire's greatest fantasy to have the privilege of consuming their partner in this way. A finger dips into my warmth. It's every vampire's naughty wet dream to feast on uterine lining.
Emery, oh, yes. Yeah.
I would have told you sooner, but it doesn't exactly come up in natural conversation. Fair enough. What could it hurt? Everyone is gone. You're cleaning up the mess, I say. I won't leave a drop behind, he promises.
Uterine lining?
Yummy, a delicacy.
Get his red wings. Go off.
Yeah.
Little Virgie.
He gets underneath her desk as she sits at her chair and he starts eating her out. And just as she's getting really into it, Meryl walks in and says she's forgotten her ID and looks at Lila, who's breathless and gripping her desk and is like, are you okay?
She's like, no.
Lila tries to play it cool, but Emery's head knocks the underside of the desk. And Meryl's like, no fucking way. Have a good night, Lila.
Uh-huh. I love it.
What a good friend.
The time for the big event is finally here. And Lila is dressed in a sexy dress with a high slit. And Emery is wearing this dapper tux with bat cufflinks, which I thought was so cute. Morgana outdid herself and all of the Flora decor looks amazing. The silent auction is also set up with hundreds of valuable items, and Lila thinks her magical weapons from Gub are going to be the highest ticket items. The party starts and everyone is clearly ogling Emery. He's the hottest guy there, and he's working the raffle ticket booth, and Lila thinks to herself how smart it was because he's so handsome that people are buying tickets left and right. They take a break from hosting and both go get divination readings from Vic. He drops the cards and tells Lila and Emery that the cards are telling him that the two of them have crossed paths sometime in their youth. They have a fiery passion for one another, but there will be a storm bringing them both great sorrow. They decide if the cards are right, then they have the power to change their future and head off to the stage where Ren is being auctioned off for a date. The bids go higher and higher, with the winning bid coming from Morvina at 1500 gold. Meryl walks on stage and surprises Lila by announcing that she'll be auctioned off as well, which wasn't part of the plan. So Lila's like, oh fuck, I'm being auctioned off.
Oh fuck.
Lila tries to run, but she's held in place and the bidding starts at 500. The crowd seems excited at the chance for a date with her. Emery bids 1,000 gold, and then a voice rings out for 1,500, and it's Barry.
I was about to say,
poopy pants.
Get the fuck out of here. Where's your wife, newlywed?
The two men go back and forth, driving the price higher and higher, but Prince Barrick outbids Emery at 10,000 gold.
No.
Emery looks absolutely livid, and he helps her off the stage and tells her that she doesn't actually have to go with him, and he'd be willing to make a large donation to the scrolls department to change her mind. But Lila says, no, it's fine. It's a lot of money, and she needs some closure, and tells him that she needs some air. Later on, she meets Barrick in her office and is like, what the actual fuck? You're totally humiliating your wife. What is this?
Yep.
He wipes the tears rolling down her cheeks, and she sees his aura is blue with sadness. He tells her being this close to her feels right and he needs her, and she tells him she loves him as he crashes a kiss down on her. When it's over, she says, but you can't love me back, not the way you love her. He tells Lila he doesn't love his wife, and if she'll only give him 2 years, and she's like, and what, you'll divorce her? She tells Barrick his wife seems nice, so go love her, go get to know her, but they can't do this, and she can't love him anymore, and she walks out the door.
Get him, girl.
Yeah, period.
As soon as she's out of the door, she vomits on the floor and starts to walk aimlessly and realizes she's gone to Emery's house.
That's her boo.
Yeah.
She realizes how much she needs him right now, but she tells herself how unfair it is to expect him to dry her tears over another man, and she turns to leave. She sees his curtains rustle and pauses, waiting to see if he'll open the door, but he doesn't. She heads home and takes a hot bath with some wine, and she just sulks about how much Beric hurt her and how she doesn't know what to do with her feelings for Emery. She decides she's over the pity party, and she goes to get out of the tub a little bit tipsy and loads a bag up with liquor and heads back to Emery's house.
Go get your man, girl.
She trips and falls on the sidewalk because it's raining, so she's looking a little insane when she knocks on his door, but he immediately opens it, telling her that he thought she was going to keep him waiting all night. So he's like, I was waiting for you.
He said, I saw you when you come earlier.
He invites her inside, and she cries on his couch about Beric while he rubs her back. And he asks how he can help, and she asks if he has any rope. He goes and grabs some, and she starts to do this, like, cord-cutting spell, because she's a witch. As she's running through the whole ritual, she's starting to feel better already. So the cord-cutting spell, like, cuts the emotional tie that she has with Beric.
Okay. That's kind of cool.
Uh-huh. The spell requires that she go through her history of memories of Beric, and she's brought back to her first kiss with him at 17, his rejection right after, and making secret love in their 20s. She lights the candle meant to sever the ropes, and when the spell is complete, Emery walks up to her and takes her into his arms. They cuddle on the couch, and she thanks him for being here for her, and he tells her he's only doing the bare minimum, and it makes him question how poorly everyone in her life treats her. He brings her to his bed, and he tucks her in, and as she's falling asleep in his bed, she notices a small jewelry box on his nightstand before sleep takes her. A week passes, and Lila is working alone in the office because everyone is off for the Blossom Binding holiday, and this is a holiday that celebrates the significance of native-grown roses and their uses.
Oh.
Yeah, it sounds like it's like Christmas, basically. Like Christmas and Valentine's Day.
Oh, cute.
She receives an urgent notice from the prince because he needs a book, stat. And she's really annoyed because he just keeps piling shit on her desk during the holiday. So she's like stuck working while everyone else is off celebrating. And he's like, I need this. I need this.
Ew, get it yourself, bitch.
She sees that he's requesting a book called The Mage Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. And she's like, yeah, that seems really urgent, Beric. She climbs the ladder to find it. And when she reaches the top shelf, she starts to fall off the ladder. She accepts her fate, but she never hits the ground because Emery catches her midair.
Her hero.
She asks what he's doing here since they're technically closed, and he tells her that his passport makes it difficult for him to leave the city and re-enter. The city is very strict with the passports of the undead. So if he left, he'd have to, like, reapply for a visa to get back into the city.
Oh.
So he's like, I'm stuck in town. She tells him she's just working through the mountain of requests Beric keeps sending her, and Emery asks if she wants him to kill him. And she laughs and says no. He's all dead serious, too. He's like, you want me to kill him? Because I will.
He's like, I'll go suck all the blood out of him right now.
He made you cry a lot. I'll kill him for you.
Dead. Dead man. Emery says that Beric is lucky he's the crown prince, or he would have been dead the second he witnessed Lila's pain at the wedding ceremony. She's like, you didn't even know me then. And he says, I already felt attached to you, because when you know, you know.
Period.
She orders for him to celebrate the holiday with her at her apartment if he'll help her get through all this paperwork. If he does, she might let him suck more than just her blood tonight.
Oh, yeah, suck on that pussy.
They finish in no time, and they stop by the store on the way home because she tells Emery that she wants to give him the full Blossom Binding Day experience since he's never celebrated. They have to decorate with flowers and bind books with memories. It's apparently a special day for lovers where people will bind themselves to their partners eternally. Sounds so romantic.
It does.
Emery says the holiday seems fun and says he'll stop by his place before coming over tonight. He shows up with a box full of his own stuff for the celebration, and he's also wearing this, like, sheer black outfit.
Oh. Dressing up for his gal.
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, 15 years ago when like, those sheer tops were in where, like, the girls would only wear, like, bandeaus under?
Yes.
I did that shit, like, every day.
Yeah. That's, like, what I pictured in my head. Like, he just wore, like, a black button-down, but it was just, like, a sheer black button-down.
That was, like, my going-out outfit.
Yeah. Business cash.
Look at my midriff.
Exactly.
See it.
Lila is hella soaked looking at him, which I don't think that outfit would get me hella soaked, but like,
go off.
Yeah. They decorate her house and cut some flowers out of paper, and they bring out sentimental items to bind to the decorations, and Emery pulls out one of Lila's hair ties that she left at his house, saying that he cherishes it because it came from a time where he could only hold her in his dreams.
Stop.
Okay, cutie.
And now Lila's like, am I gonna fall in love with this guy?
You are.
She pulls out a blood-soaked handkerchief from the first time he fed from her. And then Emery pulls out the box from his nightstand and opens it to a beautiful emerald ring.
Is he gonna tell her?
He asks her if she knows how long he searched for her as tears form in her eyes. She asks why he didn't say anything before, and he says because he wants her to love him for who he is now, not the boy he was when he was 16. And Lila thinks to herself how lucky she is to have fallen in love with him twice in one lifetime.
So cute.
After the holiday, she's back at work and called into Barrick's office. He's feeling the effects of the cord cutting spell, so I guess when she like cut that emotional tie, it works both ways too.
Okay, that's so cool.
Yeah, that would have saved me so much trouble in high school.
Yeah.
Barrick is furious that she did this without his consent, and she says she's lived life for him, and now it's time she did something for herself. He tells her he has a favor to ask of her. The undead kingdom of Mossmire wants a very important document located in the scrolls department. They're trading for their collection on the chemical compositions on Flora, and he wants her to authenticate it. She agrees on one condition. She gets to bring an assistant. Obviously, she takes Emery, and in a couple of days, they're off in a carriage to Mossmire.
And that's where he's from, right?
That's where they met, at the fair.
Okay.
I think he's from Windmire, but that carnival thing was at Mossmire, so that's where they met. Emery falls asleep on Lila's lap, and she starts thinking about how she wants them to put a label on whatever it is that they're doing. He wakes up and asks if she wants to play a game, and they play a silly little game of Never Have I Ever that quickly turns dirty, with Emery asking if she'd rather suck his cock or make the driver uncomfortable with her cries of pleasure. And Lila says, why not both? Oh. Por que no los dos?
Crazy.
Yeah. And there is like a driver at the front of the carriage.
That poor man. My hands fumble to tug down his trousers as I take my place on my knees in front of him. He twitches in pleasure as I cup his balls with my palm, stroking his length with my other hand. I run my tongue along the base slowly, teasing and tasting. My motions are deliberately unhurried, taking my time to memorize every inch of him. I seal my lips around the head of his cock and prepare to take him more deeply.
Okay.
She says, gluck, gluck, 3,000.
Finally, Emery can take no more and flips Lila so she's on her stomach, bent over the seat of the carriage, and he just starts finger blasting her.
Let's Hell go. Yeah. Even in a hurry, he is considerate. His fingers excitedly pulse in my pussy, eliciting the lewd moans he promised to deliver. When he's satisfied, he replaces his finger with his cock, slamming into me and forcing me to hold the opposite seat of the carriage for balance. My breath hitches as I delight in the fullness of him stretching me.
They have a driver.
Yes, they do.
They don't care.
No, they don't.
They fuck so hard that an axle breaks on the carriage. The driver taps on the door to be like, are you guys okay? Because the carriage just broke.
He's like, my carriage.
This is my livelihood. I have a family.
Stop fucking back there.
They hurry and get dressed and decide they're close enough to Mossmire to walk the rest of the way. They reach the castle and are greeted by a gargoyle named Alaric, who introduces himself as the head of the scrolls department. As Lila looks around, she sees how dark and dreary this whole city is, and Alaric tells her that the vampire king and queen are in meetings currently, but shows her to her room to wait in the meantime. As she shuts the door, she hears Alaric and Emery speaking in angry, hushed tones at one another, and she's like, what is going on here?
What is going on here?
Interesting.
She takes an accidental nap and wakes up when Alaric knocks on the door, telling her they're ready to bring her down to authenticate the documents that they're trading for. She goes to their scrolls department and everything seems to be on the up and up. She heads down to Emery's room and tells him she has somewhere she wants to take him. They walk through the forest and she brings him to the fun fair of misfortune where they met as teenagers. And she expects him to be stoked, but he's like, why are we here? Like, he doesn't remember the night they met, and now she's really confused. She takes him to Drench the Wench, which is one of the games that they played when they first met, and he was, like, really good. He drenched the wench every time.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did.
But he misses every shot, and now she's like, what the hell? Because he was so good when they were here as kids. They play a little frog catapult carnival game, and she gets a little bit of hope because he plays like she remembered that he did that night, and he wins her this little lilac bat plushie, which, like, I want a lilac bat.
bat plushie.
Yeah, cute.
That's so cute.
They take a romantic little Ferris wheel ride and they wind up on the same mossy knoll where they were on the first night. And she asks him if he's going to run away again. And he says, never. The next day, Lila and Emery are summoned to discuss the authenticity of the document sent over from Rosewick. Everything is going according to plan for the trade when the Duke walks in and he looks just like Emery.
Wait a second.
Dun, 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 dun.
Wait a second.
Everything is clicking for Lila. This was the man that she met when she was a teenager. Emery's twin brother, Rin.
The T.
The old switcheroo. Lila immediately turns around and runs back to her room, dropping to the floor and screaming. All of her love for Emery turns to hate, and she vows to make him feel pain the way she does in this moment.
Oh my god.
That night, she's summoned to join Rin for dinner, so she puts on her sexiest dress and is ready to piss Emery off. Rin knocks at her door and tells her that they're going to have a private dinner prepared by the palace chef. He looks nervous as he chews on his bottom lip and tells her he spent every moment up to this point thinking about what it would be like to talk to her again, and she tells him she's dreamt of him too. They sit down for their meal, and he tells her the heavens should envy her beauty and thanks her for being here with him tonight. Lila is served chicken and carrots, and Rin is eating blood gelatin cubes.
Disgusting.
Yummy.
Disgusting.
Mm-mm-mm. She asks Rin why Emery did it. Why did he lie and pretend to be his brother? And Rin says he doesn't really know. Rin held onto the ring for years and had looked for her after that night at the carnival. As he climbed the ranks, he figured out that she was head of the scrolls department in Rosewick, but he never came to her because she didn't even know his name. And now Lila is just crying at this point.
Yeah, she's been fucking this man this whole time that she thought
she had stranger dick in her.
Yeah.
Stranger dick.
Ah.
Rin says he told Emery everything about her, and shortly after, he got the request for the transfer to Scrolls in Rosewick, and he was going to take it, but Emery stole his credentials and went in his place. She's distraught because she doesn't know what to do with her feelings for Emery and who Rin really is, so he tells her they can just use tonight to get to know each other. They sit on a couch together to talk, and she leans her head on his shoulder and asks him to come back to Rosewick with her, and he says, of course. When she leaves, she goes to Emery's door and knocks, and he answers looking puffy-eyed and exhausted. He invites her in, and she tells him she needs him to fuck her until she doesn't hate him anymore. And if that's not possible, then to fuck her until she hates him even more. He grabs her by the waist and tells her to tell him to stop at any time, and he will. And he has a hurt expression on his face. She tells him she almost fucked his brother tonight, and maybe she should have, but tonight she'll settle for him. Which, like, burn.
Ooh, yeah, ouch.
They kiss wildly with her legs wrapped around his waist. They strip quickly, and he tells her only good girls get to make noise, and she isn't very nice, teasing him the way she is as he thrusts two fingers inside of her.
Ooh, naughty.
I know. He starts to lick her clit before biting into her thigh and painting a heart on her skin with her blood. He degrades her and tells her she's not as smart as she thinks she is if she couldn't even see what was right in front of her. And being spoken to like this is somehow exciting to her.
Oh my god.
He positions himself so his dick is right at her entrance and bites her nipple, causing blood to flow down her stomach, and tells her she's the most beautiful pawn he's ever played as he slides into her.
Okay.
Bring the other brother in.
I love that no one else knows what a horny little slut you are. Why didn't you fuck my brother and instead came running back to me? Hmm? I don't know. I barely managed to think through his forceful thrusts. He sinks fully into me, leaning down to whisper in my ear. Because deep down, you know only I can take care of you. Look at how well you take me. He pulls my legs above his shoulders, slowly, pulsing in and out. Look for yourself. I obey his command, and I can't take my eyes off where we intimately connect. His cock glistens with my essence. Now tell me, are you still thinking of fucking him? This phrase takes me out of whatever scene this kinky roleplay has immersed me in. I don't need you. I can live without you. Perhaps, but you want me, and that's even worse, isn't it? He changes our positions, putting me on all fours and slamming into me with his full force. When he pulls out and his seed pains my back, I silently curse him for it. He's right. I want him, and it's so much fucking worse.
Oh, that's hot.
It hot. Is. We love a little hate fuck.
I know. We love a good hate fuck.
That is hot.
When Emery falls asleep, she sneaks out of his room, leaving him a note. She gets into the carriage with Rin to head back to Rosewick. The entire ride back, Rin chats to her, but she can't clear her mind and stop comparing the brothers to each other. When they arrive, Rin is fully posing as Emery to everyone they see, and when they're ready to wind down for the night, he asks if he's staying at her place. Because remember, the passport visa situation for the undead is super strict. So he's just posing as Emery so he can get into the city.
But also kind of weird that he's like just assuming that like, oh, yeah, like you've been fucking my brother, but you thought it was me. But we're going to fuck. Like, yeah, you know,
you're going to suck my dick, right?
Like, I'm going to stay with
my
you,
place
right?
or yours, babe.
You're going to like gloss over everything that just happened and just move forward, right?
Crazy.
She's not ready for that. So she says no. She'll show him to Emery's apartment. He sees a bunch of homeless people camping on the streets and looks at them with disgust, asking why they don't just ship them off to a different town.
Ew.
Lila is grossed out by this and is like, you're talking about women and children. He's like, yeah, I guess you're right. But now she's kind of got the ick.
Yeah, understandably.
He tries to invite her inside for dinner, but she says no. She wouldn't be able to bear being in there without Emery. She tells him the ground rules. You source your own blood, no drinking from me, and you'll need to be at Scrolls first thing in the morning for Emery's shift. She starts to walk home, but her feet take her to Barrick's house. She knocks at the door, and his wife Aslan answers. She seems happy to see Lila and tells her she's been meaning to invite her over and tells her to come inside. Barrick is confused and asks why she's there, and Lila says she just needs a friend. She sits down with the couple, who seems happy and in love, and tells them everything. The conversation turns into this little girl talk, with Lila really taking a liking to Aslan, and Barrick just fully leaves the room. So now it's just Lila and Aslan hanging out, and Barrick's like, you guys are bonding. I'm gonna leave. Aslan tells Lila that it sounds like she left her heart in Mossmire, and even though he lied, maybe she needs to give him a second chance and hear him out.
Yeah.
Lila goes to work the next morning feeling foggy and depressed, and a bouquet of flowers is waiting for her at the office from Emery. She throws them in the trash.
Is it from Emery or is it from fake Emery?
No, it's from real Emery.
Oh, okay.
Rin walks in late as Lila is working hard to catch up on the work she fell behind on because of her trip, and she looks at him and is like, someone slept like a baby. And he says, more like a peasant. And she's like, ew, maybe this guy's gross.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like smarmy dick.
Smarmy. I know how you love that word.
I fucking love smarmy. She tells him not to be late tomorrow. Everyone's aura is off as they keep working, and she knows that they can all tell something is wrong. In the middle of the day, two palace workers she doesn't recognize walk in and tell her that she's received a summons and needs to come with them immediately. She's brought before the council and is shaking in her boots because this has never happened to her before. So, like, she's obviously in trouble.
Did Barrick do something? That little bitch.
They tell her that she's being accused of gross negligence of the Scrolls Department on 40 counts, 23 of those being holy documents. She's confused and says she has no idea what they're talking about, but one of the council members brings out a file folder with documents stating that 40 documents have been signed out on the same date at the same time with her signature on them, and she's confused because she's never allowed anybody to sign out more than the allotted 5 documents at once. She tries to tell them that she never authorized this, but they say this is a holy crime because of the amount of sacred texts in the log. She's fired immediately and barred from having access to the Scrolls Department, and her job is like her entire life, so this is horrible.
No.
She goes home and is absolutely miserable between being fired and the situation with Emery. Meryl knocks on her door demanding to know what the fuck is going on. Meryl says that Emery has been spending the last 24 hours extorting Scrolls employees and seducing Jessica to have her job reinstated. And Emery is Rin, but Meryl doesn't know that.
He's a bitch.
Nobody in the Scrolls Department believes that Lila is guilty, and now they're all on a mission to prove her innocent. Emery got information from a security guard and found out that Jessica was giving blowjobs in return for access to the building by herself.
Fucking whore. She's a slut. This is why we don't like Jessica's. I'm just kidding.
After that, Emery/Rin asked Jessica out for drinks and got himself invited back to her place, where he ransacked her house and found old parchments with Lila's handwriting and practice pages that Jessica had been using to perfect her forgery. Meryl tells her that her job at Scrolls is hers again if she wants it, and Lila's like, I don't know if I want to go back. I have a whole separate set of problems going on right now. Emery isn't actually in Rosewick. That's his twin brother, Rin. And now Meryl's like, what the actual fuck? And Lila explains the entire fucked up situation to her. She meets up with Rin and takes him to dinner to thank him for everything he did to clear her name, but drops the bomb on him that she's in love with Emery and doesn't want to lead him on. He takes it surprisingly well and tells her that although he won't say he wishes her and Emery well as a couple, he wants her to be happy and thanks her for a memorable night at the carnival all those years ago. She decides to go back to work after all, and on one of her first days back, Barrick walks in and tells Lila there's a visitor for her at the gates. She knows it's Emery, and she says she doesn't want to see him.
Why?
She's playing hard to get. She's mad.
Stop.
Beric tells her that Emery is refusing to feed until he sees her, so she's like, oh shit, and she runs out to find him. He's lying in the dirt, basically half dead.
The dramatic.
So dramatic.
He's doing a hunger strike. She runs to him and puts her ear on his chest but doesn't feel a heartbeat. She yells for Beric to get over here and hold Emery's head as she rolls up her sleeves and pierces her arm on his fangs. He slowly starts drinking and Beric tries to tell Lila to stop because he's had enough. But she says, no, he needs this. Emery's eyes open just as Lila passes out. She wakes up sometime later to Emery stroking her cheek, and she tells him he has some explaining to do. He says he's a selfish bastard who was always jealous of his golden child brother. When his brother came back after the fair and told him about the beautiful girl he'd met, he had to listen to Rin talk about her for literal years. When the job opened up at Skrulls, Emery decided to take it to finally do something for himself that his brother could be jealous of, since Rin had made Emery help him track Lila down but refused to act on anything. He never intended to fall in love with her, but he did, and Lila tells him she doesn't forgive him, but she can't live without him.
Oh, okay.
Now we're in the epilogue. It's a year later, and Emery and Lila are celebrating with all of their friends at their new apartment for the Blossom Binding holiday. Emery gets down on one knee in front of everyone and presents her with an ugly emerald ring and asks her to marry him, and she says yes.
Cute.
She says, but the it's end. So ugly.
She's like, it's hideous. Yes. Also, I think emeralds are very pretty. What is she talking about?
It's my birthstone, bitch. Well, Riley, how many red pepper emojis do you give this one?
I think I'd give this one 4. Maybe like 4.25.
Slay.
Okay.
Yeah. I liked the spice. And I did like the story. It was very cutesy.
It was cute. It was low stakes, not stressful.
Loved it. There was a third act breakup, sorta.
Yeah.
Which I kind of hate, but it wasn't terrible. And I loved it. I liked the book a lot.
My main issue was like, Rin was terrible, but also he was really nice.
Right. What the fuck?
Yeah.
It was weird.
Very weird. Because it's like, you couldn't hate him necessarily. Because like, he was just like, yeah, okay, yeah. I don't know.
Have fun with my brother, I guess.
Yeah.
Especially just because, like, he apparently, like, spent years pining after her and then was just like, meh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So fucking weird.
Was that the character that you wanted to know more about?
Yeah, that was what I was talking about at the beginning.
Okay.
That kind of threw me off. I thought he was going to be more of a villain, but he was just like, okay.
Yeah. With, like, a longer book, there definitely could be, like, more, way more to it. But,
yeah.
It's good. It's cute. I liked it.
Do you think Emery's hot?
I do.
He is right. Sexy. Look,
he sounds hot.
Would you trade places with Lila?
Yeah. Sounds kind of fun.
Yeah. Who doesn't want to be a librarian?
Yeah. She sounds like she's like a bitch in charge. I love that. Good for her. She gets to fuck a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Cast spells.
Who doesn't want that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So next week, we're telling Riley all about American Queen by Sierra Simone. And this is going to be a very special episode because...
You guys!
Yeah!
Shelby's coming back!
Yay! Our Queen Shelby!
Sweet baby angel.
She is a sweet baby angel.
So we're going to have Riley look at the cover of American Queen and give us her best guess on what it might be about.
So we have a lady on the cover. She looks mm-hmm. very fancy. She's not facing the cover. It's her back. And it says on the front, it says, I serve at the pleasure of the president. So, and it has American in the title. So I can only, you know, gather so much. I feel like it's going to be somebody that's in like presidential power. Or maybe VP, maybe state treasurer, who knows?
Okay.
But she's going to be fucking him. She's going to be fucking him. And there's going to be some drama. There is going to be so much drama.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Love it.
I feel
it.
Like that one's not hard to guess on as much. Obviously, no. I don't know what it's about, but there's quite a few hints.
At the pleasure of the president.
Okay.
It's like Joe Biden.
I forget her name. Monica. It's Monica something.
Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Queen.
I mean, Bill Clinton back in the day could get it.
Honestly. Yeah. Even George Bush back in the day.
Which one? The first one or the second one?
Second one.
Oh.
I think.
He did 9/11.
I was about to say, yikes.
All right. Cut it out.
Yikes.
Wait, who's that other one? John F. Kennedy?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. He's kind of hot.
Yeah, but we know what happened to him.
Yeah. He's dead.
He was the one that was shot in the back of a car, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I've seen a video of it. Jarring. Quite jarring.
Yeah.
They show that scene very sad. In high school, like in class.
And it literally shows his like brain.
Brains, like, yeah.
Yeah, they're like, here, watch this snuff film.
Do you want to watch How a live assassination?
That guy was the president. How do you guys feel? Underage children?
Yep. You know he never got caught? That guy still walks free to this day. Oh, that's fucking great.
That's crazy.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe. Don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten for early access ad-free episodes. And at the second tier, you have access to a podcast of unfortunate events where Riley and I will be doing a deep dive into a series of unfortunate events by Lemony Snicket.
Woo! Follow us on Instagram @smutupandlistenpodcast. And on TikTok @smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram @smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok @smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.